It's Tuesday, the day we read from your emails. Our question and answer session last week on autism and vaccines did not sit well with some listeners. Many agreed with Christina Saraceno-Blakey, who emailed from Chicago to complain, "I found the show extremely one-sided. My husband and I are very thankful we decided to look into this ourselves and not simply take the experts' word for it. Though the treatments aimed at detoxifying their bodies of heavy metals and regulating their immune systems, my boys are doing extremely well today. My eldest no longer suffers from asthma, and my son with autism is mainstreamed in his second grade class and is at grade level with his peers. He's a well-liked member of his class with many friends. My youngest under-vaccinated boy has neither autism nor asthma." And Kim Reinier, a listener in North Carolina, wrote, "In September 2000, each of my twin boys were injected with 20 times the EPA safety limit of mercury for their weights. Similar excess doses were repeated over the course of the next year and a half. I do not know if mercury plays a role in my children's autism, but it was a toxic dose and one that should have been avoided. Whether you have a child with autism or not, you should be appalled by the decision-making of our most trusted medical establishment." Leading up to Father's Day, we talked with one of the authors of the book, The Dangerous Book for Boys, basically a manual for dads and their sons, full of how-to guides on tying knots, building a go-kart, playing chess, even grammar. And for many of you, it brought back memories. "I want to thank the author for giving my kids a taste of the childhood I had," wrote Monica Gowen, a listener in Florida. "They've actually turned off the video games and are outside working on a clubhouse project as we speak." Another listener, Kay in Michigan, emailed to complain, "The most dangerous thing about the book is the message it communicates. It's not the notion that fathers and sons bond over building treehouses that rings false. Substitute children for boys, and it works. Promoting opportunities for family bonding that's based on flawed sexist beliefs supports the kind of ideology that threatens to pull our society backward half a century." No matter what name you give it, our conversation with Joe Queenan on why he hates documentary movies touched a nerve. Sam Smith emailed from Kansas, "I was beyond outrage," he wrote. "It sounded to me like he just wasn't an Al Gore fan. I happen to love documentary films. I find them to be a special kind of entertainment as well as informative. I would much rather spend my hard-earned money on a documentary than some silly blockbuster movie." This month marks the 40th anniversary of Aretha Franklin's version of Respect hitting the top of the Billboard charts, and our conversations about that song prompted this response from Stephanie Dixon, a listener in Arkansas. "A few years ago for our 35th anniversary, my husband gave me a gift of Aretha. We'd never heard her in person, so he bought us tickets to her farewell concert in Detroit. We drove up from Arkansas to attend on a warm, perfect night. Aretha looks a little different and her voice has ripened, but she still got it. That night she soared, and two Arkies, along with several thousand other folks, sang backup for her, a longtime fantasy of mine. When she broke into Respect, we all leapt to our feet and joined in. That crowd knew every word, every note, every nuance." If you have comments, questions, or corrections for us, the best way to reach us is by email. The address is talk@npr.org. Please let us know where you're writing from and give us some help on how to pronounce your name.